Watership Council, Glenn Gittner, Glenn, sit down. The rest of the committee will be here in a few minutes, and it is being taped, they have access to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Glenn Gittner, and I am the, I wear two hats. I'm the coordinator of the Watershed Council and of the Soil Water Conservation District. And I've been in this present position for 6 years. And a little background which might be useful to this committee is, long time ago, my ancestors arrived in this country on the boat called the Mayflower. And one of my relatives was involved with throwing the tea overboard and causing a big war. And eventually he was hung in England as a spy and made the comments, "I regret that I have one life to give for my country." And that would be Nathan Hale. And, well, he had offspring, and here I am today in front of this committee. I never thought my roots would reach that way, but it's apparently in my blood. And I received a Bachelor of Science degree from the University of Maine, one in Forest Management and one in Wildlife Management. And given my roots are from New England, it makes us storytellers. So I promise you and the committee that I will not be here today talking about we need more money and more people, but give you a general story of life as a coordinator and trying to implement Oregon Plan projects. And the theme reminds me of an anecdote that we once learned in Maine of, and I'll give you my Maine accent, and every time you hear this, it might be representative of the common theme, that I was sitting in front of the IGA in Sutherland one Saturday afternoon when this fella comes up to me and says, "Which way to Millinocket?" And I says, "Well, you could turn down the road, head west at the intersection, and follow the road. It's a tarred road, but it turns to dirt by and by, and then gets back into the tar road and takes you out." "Well, no." "Well, you could go back the other way and head west at the light and get on the turnpike and get off at the toll booth in Augusta and follow I-5. "Well, no. That's not finished yet." "Well, you could head west and head to the coast of the road that the tourists use a lot and follow that up." "No, that stops in Bucksport, Millinocket. Can't get there from here." And in trying to implement a project, many times I feel the same way of everywhere you go, there's a hurdle. You know it's there and you know it can be gotten to. And everything I'm trying to tie together is I've given a lot of thought to and as possible solutions. I don't know all of the things that occur up here, but I hope you will listen. I think there's some pretty good thought into these. Is number one is our grant process. It evolved from way back when we were given a lot of money to go out and implement projects to get people going and build the trust with the government and coordinators and councils. And that idea has worked very well, and in fact, it's probably worked too well in that everybody now is applying for money that we don't have. It's become a big fight over getting dollars to keeping staff, of trying to promise things to people and keep their hopes up, that it has just turned into somewhat of a nightmare. And that ties in with my other area of the permits. And on the second page of your handout, I've given you some little bit of timelines that we go through, and one of the biggest stumbling blocks that people forget sometimes is who's at the top of the food chain, and that would be the landowners. Without them, councils and districts don't exist, and without that, OWEB doesn't exist, and without that, we lose a lot of our management of private lands, which is not a good thing. So we've been asked over a period of time to come up with watershed assessments, which the Illinois Valley has done through the help of the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And we've gotten help from every state and federal agency, National Marine Fisheries, ODF&W, everyone involved in restoration, and put that forward. And it's all basically telling us the same thing. We have high stream temperatures in the summer and low summer flows. And so we set off to do projects. And it seems like in the grant process, we're back explaining everything that was written in here again. And to me, I'm like, well, we did that. You people all helped us with that. Why can't we just put that forward? And down here in the Rogue Basin, we have evolved into a to a better body in that we've formed the Rogue Basin Coordinating Council, which is all 7 watershed councils have united together to work on common projects, of that being fish passage, our biggest one, of man-made fish passage barriers. We have a lot of people that still use old concrete dams and push-up dams in the streams that at different flow levels can pose problems. So we've come up with a basin strategic plan. And again, the same people were involved with this, and I can provide copies for people if they request them. So we have all this data, we have all these people ready to go, and then we hit a OEB grant cycle that says, okay, well, you need to have fully developed projects here by the review team. And I'm like, well, that's fine, but, you know, I don't have the staff, we don't have the money to do the survey, so all your questions that you want to know about this project before you decide whether we can fund it or not, we can't give you the answer. Again, it's like you said in front of the market. We can't get there from here. So we sit there and go around and argue with the review committee. So a possible solution, which I think we've accomplished a little bit with OEB, is a big block grant to the Rogue Basin Coordinating Council. And I think that's the whole fundamental purpose of the Oregon Plan and councils, is things done at a local level. And it might be worth exploring with some more grants as, okay, you folks prioritize and come together, and we've gotten over that stage of fighting of money and about people and power, that we're pretty well united, that we can say, okay, each council is going to be ready at a different stages of the game, and we can all work together and help one another pool resources. Because another issue is, that's fine, we've given OEB grants or other grants, but now we need agency approval. Permits, et cetera. Well, if the state agencies aren't have enough staff to process all the permits, well, we can't get there because we're waiting on them. And an example of this is we did a project 2 years ago. Our focus has been at removing push-up dams. The Illinois Valley was a pilot project, and we've gotten fairly good at that. Was Water Resources was saying, you know, instead of piping ditches along raise the expense, that there might be potential for groundwater. So we drilled a deep hole in the ground, the deepest one ever drilled in Cave Junction, 800 feet, and never hit bedrock. We found 3 different water layers, petrified wood, all kinds of stuff, and said, yep, at the top layer, there's enough water for these people to get their irrigation rights. So it's been 2 years now, and we just got a letter the other day from Water Resources stating that can't get there from here. We don't know if this is groundwater, if this is surface water, and of course, to their credit, we drilled a hole right in between 2 drainages, Althouse Creek and Sucker Creek. So they don't know which one it's affecting and how to know which one to write up the transfer for. So we sit here, like I say, after 2 years of spending OEB dollars, and we're trying to get someplace, and now these people have given up their crops for a couple of years, put money in for piping, and we're not doing justice here. And I would think that in this block grant concept, being as coordinated as we are, that we would also put in for money for the agency help or whatever we needed. I've seen in some OEB meetings that agencies are now getting money out of OEB funds, which some ways I do not like, but in other ways it might be necessary, that instead of increasing staff per se, if we've had certified water rights examiners or some other people that we needed to help Water Resources and tied it into specific projects, we might be able to be creative here. And it would solve a lot of the fighting, and then us at our level could take care of things. And on the same matter, if some other councils were not as united as we are, it might be the same chance of, instead of a review committee having to review grants, I was talking to someone from the state who said, spend 60 days a year away from their job, and this is somebody in Water Resources that we need tremendously, of reviewing grants, and half of them are not even worth the time, that let's go to the review committee and say, okay, based on the assessment we have done, here's the people that would like a project, and have the review committee say, okay, Glenn, these are your top 10 projects. Why don't we give you some money? What types of things do you need? Point of diversion transfers, water rights exams, et cetera. Over the first year, develop and have those designed. When you have all the permits in hand, come back and see us, and you can get the funding to implement the project. And what this might solve is having to amend and extend grants. I know I do that constantly. And it's all trying to estimate a budget of what something's going to cost 8 months to a year down the road when, as we know now, with gasoline prices and other, the price of PVC pipe goes up. Your estimate today may not be anything close to what it is a year from now. National Marine Fisheries, screening criteria, and some other things, that it just makes it impossible all the way around. And I've spoken with some review committee members, and they agree thoroughly. They're like, well, Glenn, you need to have this. And I go, I know I do. I am trying to, but I don't have the resources to get it. And so it gets a trade-off. It's the back and forth. And this ties into permits. It's been another area of contention for me of trying to get someplace. The Illinois River system is a very flashy system. And that water comes up quickly and goes out quickly. And I've seen the river channel change 100 feet between rainstorms. So most of the time with the projects that I do, I'm trying to wait till after the high flow events of the year are done. So if we're paying for a design, it's going to stay, because if the river changes 100 feet, then you've got to redesign everything. And at that point in time, if Division of State Lands is not ready to process the permit, there is an in-stream work window of a certain period of time that you're back to square one again of extending the grants and not being able to complete your projects. And a solution to that one would be, as I've mentioned on the handout here, it's what I call the two-day permit process, where if you had review committees out looking at projects, giving our approval, they're the same people that are doing the permits, that it would take a preliminary design that I could write up, I could send it off to Division of State Lands, they could review it and send it out for public comment. We could go out in the field one day and review the project, the preliminary design, have the engineering there, say, okay, Glenn, this looks feasible. We'll come back in the spring. We come back in the spring after the public's had their review comment, because we will not want to get rid of the due process, and go out there on the ground, and if everything was satisfactory, have the permit signed there, and we wouldn't be sitting here for 140, 150 days of waiting for permits. 2 summers ago, Division of State Lands lost 11 of my permits. They lost somebody else's. They would not return phone calls. We spent one whole summer of trying to get phone calls returned, of which there was none, including with our state police. And if we've got landowners and we have grants and everything on the table, we can't afford to operate that way.
I'm hearing and appreciate your frustration. Did you call your representative?
Yes.
And that didn't help?
That helped. That got phone calls received. But I've been since on the Technical Advisory Committee for under Senate Bill 172, and my trips to Salem now have benefited, where we are getting some help. But like I say, I think what we need to do is reward what's working in terms of our grants and other stuff, and it is a puzzle. And if you put a whole bunch of money into districts and council folks to get landowners to sign up for projects, and we don't have the agency staff to handle the permits and the other things that occur, we haven't gotten anywhere, except a lot of unhappy people, including myself, and including you folks who call up OWEB and say, how come they're not spending all this money? And again, it goes back to my analogy of, we can't get there from here. We have to do things a little differently. And I don't suggest not giving money to councils and districts as a solution, but I think we really need to coordinate and look at what's going on with all the agencies instead of fighting with one another.
I sat 5 years on the OWEB board, and before we were GWEB and became OWEB, and there was a transition period of a year or two. That was a new process, and I can remember one time we had 238 applications, and they sent these boxes to my house. There were, you know, about 4 of them full of these applications. I, as a board member, could read them. And remember, 30 of them had to do with riparian zones and try to rank them. So they had committees set up to do that. I think the process has gotten better.
Yes.
They got regional teams. I think since Jeff has got there, but OWEB originally.
had a staff of 12, was it? Ken, was it 12? And then the board was 17.
So the board was bigger than the agency. And here again, it's whether or not you could put in more dollars and investment into it.
I think they're going to become more efficient as time goes on. I hear what you're saying.
I would suggest myself, I mean, I worked with Jeff
Huntington and others, that maybe you need to spend some more time with them and look for a process that you can bring forward that might be more efficient than what you're having to work in now.
Chair, I apologize for being late getting back. But what I have heard you say in the short time I've been here, I think I understand a lot of your frustrations. And my frustration is that you think you're having trouble. You ought to hear what we hear from the private sector, who's also fighting. And sometimes I think the longest I've ever heard was 6 months, or 6 years, I mean, to get through the permit process for the project. Our economy simply can't stand that. Even the public sector can't stand that. I also wanted to mention that I think we started out with something like 32 watershed associations. Ken Bailey, you can probably help me out on that. And where are we at now, 92? Something like that. So I think we've got a lot of work just figuring out how to handle that kind of a workload. And I noticed that your recommendations are block grants to districts. A concern I have in that note is many of these watershed councils are starting out. They're just getting established and getting staffed and figuring out what their focus is going to be. So those folks aren't ready for the block grants. And I think we have a responsibility to help them get on their feet. So I don't know where the department is, but I think it's difficult to how you deal with the established watershed councils. And Wayne and I have them down on the South Coast, very much like yours, that are very well established, doing a great job. So they have a tremendous advantage over getting those grants compared to some other watershed councils that are just starting out. So somewhere or another, I think the OWEB has to be able to figure out how to make that all balance. And it takes a lot of time to do that. I appreciate that.
And, of course, we want you to be able to do a good job in the Illinois Valley because it ends up where I live at Gold Beach.
Yes.
You have to create our habitat.
Yes.
So, Ken, give us some input where you think this might be going. Or have you heard
if I may,
before?
For the record, Ken Bailey, Deputy Director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Glenn hit upon a point that I think is particularly important, and that is what local groups, conservation groups, districts, councils need is technical assistance so that they don't get into a box of not having a design that can get through the permit process, that they don't have the information that's necessary to get a grant supplied. One of the elements that we had projected for the funding for using federal funds from National Marine Fisheries Service was to invest in technical assistance at the local level. In fact, about a year ago, we put $500,000 into technical assistance. I think Glenn got a grant for that to help him on one of his projects. So that is a clear need that we see is important to be is an important investment that can provide that assistance to help them move the ball forward. I don't see it as a staffing function, but I do see it as an investment to get projects ready to go for both the regulatory process but also for the granting process. And that's something that we would like to invest in. We had scheduled to invest federal National Marine Fisheries Service monies in. If we get additional National Marine Fisheries Service funds, we would likely invest in that if those funds come to us.
I had, when I was on the board, I always had was a great supporter of watershed coordinators because you can see what a watershed that has a coordinator and the problem they're having, and when a watershed group doesn't have one, they are just sitting there spinning their wheels with this mass of paper and bureaucracy that they don't know how to handle it. So I think it's extremely important that be to be conscious of the fact.
Our board last week had a structured discussion with watershed councils about how we can invest in council support in the next biennium. So they've started that discussion specifically with the councils themselves. We invited council members as well as council coordinators to talk about how we might arrange an investment package that makes sense to them and allows them to do their job, but also doesn't break the bank. And so we tried to frame it in that framework.
Thank you. We heard this morning from the WRI, Ken, in which we're trying to get a handle on who they are and how their money flows. We knew they got $500,000 in the Christmas tree bill that eventually came out of your funds and that is now at the Fisheries Commission in Portland. But they have in their report shown that there's $850,000 that they're receiving from NOAA and another grant of $250,000 from NOAA, which is to support Watershed Council assessment and action plans and technical assistance. And when you're talking to us about your efforts to fund these kind of positions, and it sounds to me like there's a whole other effort going on over here on the side to fund these kind of positions. They also told us that the Pacific Marine Commission is providing oversight to their activities and their programs as well as OWEB. But when I talked to Jay Nicholas, he wasn't aware of OWEB providing oversight to their program. So
I'd like to clear the record on that.
I just like to pull this together for him.
Yeah.
I think this committee is pretty confused.
We were aware and have followed the application that the Willamette Restoration Initiative made for the $250,000. We participated with them to make sure that the funding that they distributed wasn't duplicative of what we were doing. We were concerned about that enough to allow them to use our process for reviewing grant applications. And rather than creating a whole new process, the last thing we wanted to do was confuse councils and districts with a whole new process. So what we allowed them to use our process. We were not an active or named party in the grant application itself. We were aware of it, and we facilitated the implementation, and we made sure that we were aware of what was going on so we didn't duplicate those kinds of efforts. But we are aware that they had applied for the funds. We didn't get engaged in their legal status. That wasn't our responsibility to deal with. But we were aware of the application, and we made sure that it was coordinated. Our Willamette River coordinator was involved in the discussions to make sure that it was coordinated effectively with the councils and districts in the Willamette Basin where it was funded or focused.
Quick follow-up. I don't want to take this too far, but it's troublesome to me when you say that when they applied for the funds, I assume you're talking about WRI.
Yes.
And I'm still not clear in my mind, and we're going to have to do some more checking on this. How can an entity who is a non-being, I guess, since their executive order had expired and it has not been renewed, how can they apply for anything if they're non-existent? This is maybe an unfair question.
Frank, I don't have a clue. We didn't raise that question. We didn't think it was our business to tell WRI what they could or couldn't do. We presumed it was a legal question between WRI and the granting entity. So we didn't second-guess their responsibilities or obligations.
And I don't mean to put the burden on you folks. I just thought maybe you had some information that we don't
have. No unique information about their legal status.
Thanks.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll be recessed just for a second here until our next speaker gets here.